Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today, I will be interviewing Laura Burton. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you'll receive alerts when new episodes are available each week on Sundays. So, Laura, how old were you when you began tap dancing? That's a pretty unique skill set to even learn.
Yeah, well, when I was a kid, my mom's friend was a tap dancing teacher. And so I think I was about 7 years old when I started and tap dance for probably about 5 or 6 years and did some shows with this dance company, all these ballerinas. I had my little tap stuff that I was doing with a couple other girls. It was a lot of fun. And I still actually remember some of the tap dances that we did. I think because it was ingrained in me so young, I still have it. I can still do some of the tap numbers. It's funny.
Wow, our brains are amazing. Once we have these things ingrained in us, it's like automatic after a while.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So is tap dancing, does it give you a really good workout? Because it looks strenuous, just the poses and everything.
You know, I think it just gave me some really good rhythm. It's a lot of coordination. And I can't, you know, I was so young, I never really thought of it as a workout. And I don't remember sweating. I just remember that, you know, it was just making sure that you had the timing. And then we were doing things with canes and top hats and things. So it was just making sure that, you know, we looked the same and how we were doing things and being coordinated. It was a lot of fun, though. I had a great time being a tap dancer.
Yeah. So have you ever been to any Broadway shows that did tap dancing?
No, not really. I've always loved watching the videos and the shows, you know, the old Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, when they were doing tap dancing. I always loved watching that.
Yeah. So I understand you were your father's co-pilot as well. How was that?
Well, my dad loved flying. And he was a private pilot. And in fact, when I was a baby, I remember being in an airplane before I remember being in a car, because it really impressed me, you know, up being in the clouds and looking down and seeing everything was so small. And I think that impression changed my perspective when I saw houses and when I saw cars, when I saw things. They didn't have the same ooh wow factor, because when I saw them, they looked like little toys from the air. And when I saw people didn't really intimidate me so much, because they looked like little ants when I was at 2,500 feet in an airplane. So I had a different kind of perspective. But my dad got me into flying when I was in high school. It was recommended by a school counselor that I do something outside of school. And so he got me into flight training. And I ended up getting to fly with him as a co-pilot for a number of years. And it was wonderful. I really loved it. And flying taught me a lot about really keeping, when you're flying, you're scanning. And you're always a little bit ahead of where you are. So you're anticipating what you need to do just ahead of where you are. And there's nothing more apparent than knowing you've got your life in your hands when you're flying an airplane, because you've got to get it on the ground and get it on the ground safely. And it's not really natural to put your nose down, because it's like a controlled crash when, you know, that's what they say when you're landing a plane. So for me in my life now, if I see something needs to be changed, if something's not going the right way, I'm more concerned about not taking action than taking action, because not taking action can make it worse. And taking action is a correction. So it had a really interesting impact on me.
Now, is there a limitation on the distance for private pilots?
It really is just about the kind of plane that you're flying and how much fuel you have and mapping out your course. You know, it's like if you're in a little small single engine airplane, you've got so much gas. It's kind of like, you know, planning a trip, you know, except you're in the air. You can go so many miles, and in the air, you're dealing with airspeed and you're dealing with winds. And if you have to go around weather, you know, or what the course is. So it really just depends. You know, if you've got a big headwind coming at you, you may be going a little bit slower than if you've got a tailwind going behind you. So when you plan, you are looking at where are you trying to get to? What's your course? Where are you stopping for fuel if it's a longer trip? And that kind of thing.
Got you. Wow, that must have been fun, especially if you all were able to go on vacation and not have to go through the regular, on the regular planes.
It was a lot of fun, yeah. And I got spoiled. You know, I didn't have to really pack a suitcase. I could just throw stuff in a bag and get in the plane, bring my pillow and go. Now I have to pack my pillow in a suitcase. It's funny.
Yeah, that does sound funny. How would you describe your childhood? That's a pretty unique experience with your father. But how would you describe your childhood?
You know, I think I was very fortunate as a kid because my parents really wanted us to have experiences. And so I was in different kinds of classes, different kinds of activities. My parents wanted us to really learn how to think and make decisions and do things. There were challenges for me. I was the youngest of three, and I think that it was kind of a competitive environment with my siblings at times. And so I was always striving to do more. And I think the baby of the family always feels like, maybe I'm generalizing, but, you know, I think for me, sometimes I felt like I was always behind. You know, it was like my brother and my sister were always ahead of me, you know, so I kind of felt that as a younger sibling. But I was very blessed in my childhood because I was given education, I was given opportunities, and I was given a lot of encouragement to go and pursue things. And so that was really nice.
So are both of your parents, do they have that nature of discovery, or primarily your dad? Or?
Well, my dad, he passed away last year. But my dad was a very creative man. He was an entrepreneur and he was an advertising guy, and he was very, very creative, very smart. And my mom was very loving. She also was very smart. She was a stay-at-home mom with us. And then when we got older, she started working and doing other things. She got into real estate for a period of time. And so they really wanted us to be our own people. You know, they weren't trying to mold us into something, but they wanted us to be able to accomplish things. So it was really nice to have that kind of encouragement.
Yeah, that sounds nice. My condolences about your dad.
Thank you. Yeah.
So can you talk a little about you had a really, I would guess it's a traumatic experience when you were chemically injured from exposure to clothing at a department store.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was an interesting thing. I was 36 years old and I wasn't really liking the person that I was. And I was feeling very conflicted and I wasn't feeling like I was doing what I should be doing in my life. And I've always been somebody who prayed a lot to God. And I prayed to God one day and I asked him, you know, is this my truth? Is this really what you created me to be? Because if it is, I really suck at this. You know, I wasn't feeling like the person that I should be. I wasn't feeling like I was very kind. And it just, I don't know why, it just kind of struck me that way. And I asked God in the prayer, I said, you know, if this is not my truth, take it away. I only want to be living my truth and what you created me to be. And a week and a half later, I was chemically injured. So when I got injured, you know, when I made that prayer, I was expecting a very different outcome. And then I end up on disability. And the part that was very difficult for me is that when I was going to the doctors, they couldn't really tell me or didn't really have much information what to do to take care of this. You know, they said, stay away from chemicals, fumes, gases, and stress. And I was living in LA with, you know, 865,000 people within 5 miles of me that we're all driving cars. And how am I supposed to stay away from car exhaust? And how do you stay away from fumes? And I started looking at, you know, where are chemicals? And they were everywhere. And I was like, you know, I looked at him when he said this, I said, how? And he said, it's very hard. So because I didn't really have much direction, I didn't really know what to do. I kept getting sicker and sicker. And at one point, it was about 3 years into this, I couldn't walk a mile because I was so fatigued. And I remember looking at my doctor, and I was really confused because I thought, I've asked God to live my truth. Why am I so sick? This can't be my truth. And I asked him, I said, I asked God to live my truth. Why am I sick like this? And he looked at me and he had literally, I must have sounded so strange to him because he said, why don't you come back in 3 months, you know, and sent me home to contemplate this on my own. And finally, I was introduced to a woman who told me how to get better. She had environmental illness, and she gave me a huge list of things to do so that I could get my health back, or at least deal with it. Because all I was being told was that you're going to get worse, you're going to get worse. And I was like, I can't, this is not my truth. I can't be sick for the rest of my life. And so when I got this list, it was way more than I could do and way more than I could afford. But I thought, you know what, I'm just going to start chipping away at it. And little by little, I got my health back. And then I was able to get back into functioning. But for a while there, at what was supposed to be the prime of my life, I was basically in a studio apartment, sick and pretty pathetic. You know, I mean, it was a weird experience.
Wow. So, and were there any other ways that, I know this period lasted at least 3 years.
Well, it was 5 years on disability. It was 6 years before I could get back to working, really working. And I started part-time, and then I got into working full-time. And then I felt like I kind of bounced around a little bit. I got some different sales jobs. And then my husband, I got married again after I got better. And he said to me, "You really like writing. Why don't you look for a writing job?" And so I looked for a writing job, and there was this internet marketing company, and they were looking for project managers, and they put their post in the writing section because they felt that they hired a writer, the writer could be articulate and write a decent email. So I got hired, and it was a $12 an hour job, and I was 48 years old, and I was like, oh God, I'm in a $12 an hour job and I'm 48 years old, you know, call me loser. But I wanted to make more money. And as I was working with clients, I started finding what they needed that I could sell them so that I could get more, I could get commissions. And then I became one of their top salespeople. And then I got promoted a couple of times.
So I've never heard of environmental illness. Does it affect a lot of people?
I think a lot more people are affected than they realize, because we're so surrounded by chemicals. There are so many chemicals being used in consumer products. And so there may be exposures to chemicals, and people may just get a headache and not realize that they got the headache because they were around chemicals. And one of the things that I was told to get better was to only drink purified water. And I've been doing that for years, because some of the waters have chemicals and stuff. A lot of the tap waters in certain areas aren't really great, but purified water works really good for me, or reverse osmosis. And then really getting rid of chemicals in my life. For a period of time, all of the cleaners that I was using, all of the soaps and lotions, shampoos, toothpaste, you know, when you put something on your skin, 60% of it gets absorbed into your bloodstream. Well, if you're using lotions that have a lot of chemicals, you may not even realize that you're putting chemicals into your body. And then eating whole foods instead of processed foods. You know, I eat very little processed food now, because I really had to not eat any of it for a long time. And I had water filters, and I was even using a charcoal filter for even, you know, rinsing off vegetables and things like that. I soaked my clothes in the washing machine with baking soda for a couple of hours to remove the chemicals from the clothing. I mean, they gave me a list of stuff that was unbelievable to do, but I was determined. I wanted to get healthy, and it did. My health came back. And the thing that's also impacts people with chemical exposure is that there are three different reactions that would happen with me if I got exposed to chemicals when I was out, because I made my home kind of a safe haven from chemicals. So it would either be really fearful, really sad, or really angry. And those were the three reactions that I would have if I got exposed to chemicals. And, you know, so sometimes people who are having these emotional reactions, or something might hit them, some of it might be a chemical thing. So I think if people are aware of their environments, if they are having issues, if they're finding they're fatigued a lot, if they're finding they have a lot of headaches, if they're finding that they're having reactions, then there may be something in the environment. You know, if they just get new carpet and it's off-gassing, If they're using certain kinds of cleaners, there may be chemicals that are causing reactions. So, you know, it's just something to be aware of.
Yeah, it's definitely something that really intrigued me because I've never heard of it. But like you said, there are people who could be suffering from it and just don't even know what's going on. So,
yeah, I had no idea. And when I finally was told what to do, I was so relieved that I could do something. And then after I got better, I did run into quite a number of people who were dealing with these issues, and I was able to help them because of what I had done.
Oh, nice. So I know you've been in sales and marketing for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was sales and marketing always something you wanted to do, or was in the back of your mind?
That's a great question. My first sales lesson actually happened when I was about 8 years old because I wanted to go somewhere and I had to ask my dad because my mom was out and he was working and I was afraid to interrupt him. But I learned to be a negotiator and I was no longer fearful of someone telling me no because I knew how to handle it. And I never really thought of sales as a career. I didn't really think sales was anything. I just always could do it. You know, I would always get a job in retail, or if I needed a job, I would, you know, back before computers, I would pick up the business white pages and I'd start at A or Z and I would just start making phone calls. I'd, you know, see companies with cool sounding names and I would just call and say, you know, hey, are you hiring? And I'd get 8 or 10 interviews halfway through the alphabet and land a sales job. So I didn't even know sales was a thing. I just always did it.
So did it give you, what does it do to you to be engaged in sales? Does it give you a high? Does it give you something that fuels you to keep going?
The thing about sales for me is that I really care a lot about people and I want to help people. When I'm talking to someone on the phone and they need help, like if I'm talking to them about their internet marketing or I'm talking to them about how they need to go in and try to get a deal done or whatever it is, because I've done some coaching and I've, you know, whatever these things are, what really is important to me is really to understand what they need and to understand what their goal is and what's important and why. And once I understand that and I understand what budget they have and where the priorities are, I can help them. And then once I've helped them, what feels really good is, you know, yes, of course, I was able to get them signed up and I'm going to make money from that. But the thing that really makes me feel good is that I gave them the right thing to do and they're going to be successful with it. And so for me with sales, it's about helping people get what they need or what they want to have things be better for them. And if I've made them a success, then I'm a success.
True. How would you define advertising for businesses? What would be your definition of that?
Advertising is getting in front of people and letting people know you're there and letting people know what you have to offer them.
Okay. And do you think, can businesses flourish without proper advertisement?
You know, when people are doing something and they have great word of mouth because they've got a great service and it's just kind of spreading, it's a wonderful thing. And a lot of times the way that happens is because they're running ads and because they have something in place where they're getting out in front of people and they're communicating and they're engaging with their customers and their potential customers. So it's about people knowing who you are and knowing what you do. And the more they see you and the more they feel they know you, the more they're going to do business with you. And advertising is one way to do that. And is probably one of the more effective ways to do it because there's so many ways of getting in front of people that you can pay to show up and be there. And there are even a lot of free ways to do it. But as a business person, it's really important that people know about you. So if you are able to do that without spending money on advertising, all the power to you. But the most successful business owners spend as much money as they possibly can on advertising, and they will continue to do so. And a lot of people take 10% of their gross income and put that into marketing. And it's a really smart strategy, because the only way people are going to find out what you do is if you let them know about it.
Now, is advertising on the internet different than in the physical world with billboards and so forth, or is it the same concept?
The concept's pretty much the same, and it's been that way for a long time. You know, back over 100 years ago, P.T. Barnum, I have a book that's, and I have 12 secret sales hacks. That's what it's called. And I took 6 secrets from P.T. Barnum and 6 from William Walker Atkinson. They're 2 different sales books that I pulled them from. And back in P.T. Barnum's day, it was newspapers. And it took 7 times to be in front of a customer before they would get to know you enough where they would come and buy from you. And in his day, it was billboards and it was flyers and it was newspapers. And that's what was available. And now we have so many places. It's really about being where your customers are going to see you. So being online, you get in front of where are your customers hanging out, whether it's Instagram, whether it's TikTok, whether it's Facebook, whether they're going and trying to find something on Google. You know, Google is what the yellow pages used to be. You know, you've got podcasts and you've got streaming. That's what radio used to be. You know, so it's really just a matter of where are you getting in front of people, and where we're getting in front of people today could change again in the next 10, 15 years, just like it did 10, 15 years ago.
Good. What are some common mistakes businesses make when advertising and marketing their brand?
If they don't really have good messaging and people are confused about what they're doing, they're not going to buy from them. And the other thing that people may not really realize is that you have to track your conversions and understand what the data is telling you. And if you're paying for advertising, you have to really be able to track and see what is the result and what's coming in from it. You know, just putting something out there to put something out there, you can do that, but it can get very expensive and it may not bring you any sales. But if you are, let's say you're doing ads online on Google, and you are showing up at the top of the first page on a keyword, and someone clicks your ad, which you pay for that click, and they come to a home page that doesn't tell them how to contact you. It doesn't show them the product that you want to sell them, and they don't really know where to go once they get there. You've just paid for somebody to decide to leave your website. But if you run that ad, and when they click on that ad, you pay for that click, and instead they land on a page where your product is there, and they can click on it and buy it right there because all the information is there, then you can see how many people decided to buy it or not. And then they have something called remarketing, where if they don't buy it, you can still follow them around on the internet for a while with your ad to remind them about the product. You may have had that happen when you went somewhere and tried to buy something. Or if you are wanting them to contact you or give you contact information, you put them on a page where they're going to fill out the form to get the information, so you generate a lead. Does that make sense?
Yes, exactly. So yeah, I've definitely had that experience. I've gone onto a site and I didn't buy anything in particular, mm-hmm. but I noticed when I went somewhere else, the banners and stuff followed. And I was like, that's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. What I love about it is that because of the technology and the artificial intelligence that marketers are using now, I get to see things I'm interested in. And I don't get shown things that I don't show an interest in online. So if I don't want to see things, you know, I just don't do Google searches on them.
Yeah, I guess we have to be strategic as buyers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Pick a device that they won't, you know, ping you on when you want to go look for something that you don't want to, you know, you don't want to have coming back at you.
True. So you mentioned this earlier when you were speaking, and this is sort of a rhetorical question. Should integrity play a role in marketing, and why?
I believe it should. And the reason is because It's different nowadays. People are very, very quick to go online and leave reviews. And if they've had a bad experience, they're going to let everybody know about it. And I think aside from that, you know, that's kind of the consequence. If you don't do the right thing, you're going to get slammed online by your customers. But the other reason is that for me, I want to feel good that I've done the right thing. And to me, doing the right thing for people is always the right thing to do. And if we have that kind of integrity, we're always going to sleep well at night. And even if, you know, if I've been in a situation where someone's wanted me to not have great integrity or, you know, sell something that I didn't actually believe in, I had to not do that after, you know, I couldn't keep doing that. Because when my mom taught me this when I was younger, she said to me, you know, Laura, there are going to be people who are going to want you to do things. But when you close your eyes at night, even if you're married and you have someone next to you, she goes, when you close your eyes at night, you are the only one that has to live what you did, live with what you did. And you want to make sure that when you close your eyes at night, you're okay with what you did. Because regardless of whether or not someone else wants you to do it, they don't have to live with what you did, you do. And I've used that for years.
Sure. I think that's very important because I've seen advertising and went somewhere and was expecting one thing and had got a totally different experience. And that just made me disappointed, you know, and scrutinized the next business even more so because of that experience.
Yeah. In sales, they call that the bait and switch. And I don't like that at all. And I get very disappointed too when that's happened. And I wish that people didn't do that. You know, I've worked in internet marketing for about 9 years now. And unfortunately, there are quite a number of people and quite a number of businesses that don't have integrity and don't do the right thing. And it makes it challenging for the business owner who's having to really sort through what's what, and they've had bad experiences. And so how are they going to move forward? So I try to help people really understand what's going to work and why. And then also, you know, if they're looking at different options, to put it into an understanding for them, so it's apples to apples, and they have a realistic game plan and realistic expectations of how things are going to happen. Sometimes people, when they decide, I need to do marketing, they come in and they need something to happen like within a week. And it doesn't work that way. When someone's going to do marketing and advertising, it takes some time. It's, you know, if you had to get in front of somebody 7 times in a newspaper ad 100 years ago, add in all the distractions, add in all the things that people are doing, and add in the fact that they're all promoting themselves to be popular. It may be 12 times that you have to be in front of somebody now. But it's at least that 7 times. Well, if you're going to get in front of somebody 7 times, it takes more than a week to do that. So, you know, sometimes you'll get in front of somebody for the first time and you just happen to have the right message and the right thing for what they need, and you get that sale that way. But that's rare, you know, maybe 1-3%.
Yeah. So you've had a lot of experience in marketing, and in your expertise currently, who are some of the best marketed brands, and what sets them apart from the pack, you think?
Well, Apple comes to mind first. And what I love about Apple and what they've done is that when they present a product, their product, they explain why it was designed the way it was and why it's going to be better than what you had before. And they really take something and, you know, what was a phone, what was a camera, what was a watch, what, you know, they took all these things and they put it into a computer and where you could walk around and you had your own personal, like, life. you know, and people keep their phones with them always. And it was brilliant marketing because they weren't really just a phone and they weren't just a camera and they weren't just a watch. It was something that was personalized to the person. It was all about the user experience. And that user experience is the most important thing from the first time somebody, whether, you know, if you have someone making phone calls to represent your company, my dad told me a long time ago, you never get a second chance to make a good first impression. And it's the experience that you give somebody. If you look at Disneyland and the Disney company, it was all about the experience. People who came there were not customers, they were guests. And nobody has a bad time at Disney. Nobody that's working there ever has a bad day at Disney. And if they do, they're not in front of the public. And so controlling the customer experience and how people are made to feel and how they are treated is what makes a brand amazing. And the most successful businesses understand that. And they make sure that their core values have to do with providing the most amazing customer experience. And that's what their customers walk away with. And that's why you see amazing reviews for these companies, because that's what the focus has been.
So if that customer experience is so good, does that also help with the pricing as well?
To some degree, what the value of what you're providing, people will afford if they want it. And to some degree, you know, I mean, somebody who can't afford a luxury car that's $100,000, it's a little bit different. But when it comes to some of the, you know, why did Starbucks coffee make so much money? Because people could afford $4 or perceive that they could afford $4, if that makes sense. And when people are coming in for an experience, you know, the interesting thing to me is I'll see people who are homeless, but they have an iPhone because it's become a priority of how they connect and how they do things. So when your product or your service is something that is important to people and they see it as something that's going to make them better, their life better, they need to have it. They're going to buy it and they'll find a way to make the money work.
Wow. That's a powerful analogy. I mean, a powerful truth that you just said. A homeless person could be walking around with an iPhone because they believe that they it's something that they really need.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So have you worked with any companies outside of the U.S.? If so, have you noticed a difference in marketing strategies?
The companies that I've worked with outside of the U.S. weren't, I wasn't marketing outside the U.S. when I was working with those companies. So I haven't really had that experience, but people are pretty much people. And again, it's about understanding what do they want, what do they think is going to make things better? Because people buy things to make themselves feel better. It's going to work better. It's going to taste better. It's going to feel better. You're going to look better. It's always about getting what you need to maintain your quality of life, whatever that level is for you. And that's really the motivation of why people buy things. They buy food because they're hungry. They go to the doctor because they want to feel better. They get a new car because they think that's better.
Gotcha. True. So did you dream that you would become as successful as you have become in anything in your life?
Well, I think I'm dreaming now to become a lot more successful than I am right now. You know, that's like actually been a big focus of mine. But I think that now that I'm older, I'm more focused on having a material kind of success. When I was younger, I wasn't raised in an environment where I missed a meal. You know, I've noticed in a lot of stories that I've heard, people who've made a lot of money didn't have some of the basics growing up, and making money was a bigger priority to them than I felt it was for me. For me, when I was out. You know, I was an artist when I was younger. I would go and I had sales jobs. Sales always gave me freedom to do whatever I wanted. But because I had always been comfortable, making a lot of money wasn't really that important to me. I wanted to understand life differently. And I wanted to be a certain kind of person, and I didn't know how to be that kind of person. And I don't know why, it just, I feel like in some ways I wanted to be more kind. I wanted to have something more to offer. I wanted to be able to help people, and I didn't know what to do that I could do to help anybody when I was younger, because I really hadn't had much experience. And you know, I just kind of got by. But now that I've gotten older and I've been through some experiences, I realize that I want to help more people, and I want to be able to help them be more successful and feel better about themselves. I think there's a lot of negativity that we have in the culture, that we have in entertainment, that happens in relationships. And I remember when I was younger, older people were so nice to me. And, you know, I was having, you know, I was going through whatever I was going through, and they were always so calm. And they, you know, it's okay. And they had a few words, and it just seemed to be the right thing that I could just, okay, grab onto that and go to the next thing. And now that I'm older and I'm one of those people, and now I understand why they felt that way and how they were that way. So I feel like now that I've really come to that peace in my soul, and I understand how to be the kind of person I really want to be, now I actually can go out and do more financially and help people.
So who has been the most influential person in your life, you believe?
Jesus Christ and God. That's been my biggest influence. I became a believer in 2007. And I've always been someone who strived to see God. But when I came to the Lord and I became a Christian, that's been the most influential. That has changed me the most. And that's been my ideal ever since.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So what is the best way for people to contact you for your services?
They can contact me at laura@416sales.com. laura@416sales.com.
And you have written a book, and you have an upcoming book as well?
Yes. I wrote 12 Secret Sales Hacks that have stood the test of time last year. And you can buy it on Amazon, but if you'd like to get it for free, you can get a free download at 416sales.com. And when you do that, you'll be on my mailing list if you want to sign up for that. And I send out emails a few times a week. And then the Ultimate Success Planner, 416, the Ultimate Success Planner, is also on Amazon if you want to get a planner that helps you keep yourself on track with your goals. And the new book I'm working on is on perseverance, which is actually the first secret in the 12 Secret Sales Hacks.
So what's your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with?
Whatever you do, make sure you love it with all your heart so that you can really dedicate your time and your energy to it in a way that you're going to feel good about.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.